Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Rex Nelson, senior editor of the Democrat Gazette, and today we talk about that Arkansas treasure. Most of us know it by the short name, just the REP, but the Arkansas Repertory Theater. What a treasure, not only for Central Arkansas and Little Rock, but our whole state, this professional theater is. And very honored to have Executive Director Will Trice with me, also Ruth Shepherd, longtime friend, longtime member of the board of the REP. And boy, so many changes, so many things have happened over recent years. I'm going to try, guys, to get this all into 30 minutes, but I may have to have you back because it's an interesting story. But Will, I want to start with you. Little Rock native, of course, go into the theater, multiple Tony Award winner as a theater producer, great New York career. And I always think of that old line by Buddy Portis of Arkansans can't quite achieve escape velocity. And, one of my favorite lines. I lived in Washington, D.C. for a while and never achieved escape velocity, but you end up back here at Arkansas. Let's start there. How did you end up back in Arkansas again and enjoyed a great career on Broadway?
Well, I mean, I guess I'll start by saying the only reason I had the great career on Broadway is the REP, and it is the reason I came back. Mm-hmm. The REP was my first exposure to theater of any kind, particularly professional theater, that's sort of that. You know, plus my family's kind of interest and was always surrounded by the arts, but you know, being able to experience professional theater as both an audience member and then as a teenager, being in a show at the REP, that's what started it all.
You were in a show as a teenager then.
I was in Lost in Yonkers, a Neil Simon play.
Yeah,
Me and Graham Gordy played brothers.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
In 94. And it was great. That's sort of what set me on the trajectory that I had. And had been in New York for about 15 years. And then when I learned of the struggles that the REP was having, like the struggles that a lot of theaters around the country have been having over these past few years, it didn't take much of an arm twist to get me back down and do what I could to try to help it out.
And I thought it was just my charm that got you back.
You are very charming.
Ruth can convince you to do some things. I had come back here to the paper full time in 2017, busy writing columns. The REP, of course, suspends operations. I believe it was April 2018. Is that correct?
It sounds right to me.
Yeah, and Ruth called me up, and I needed something else to do at that point. About like I needed a hole in the head, and said, "I'm pulling together this little group. It's going to be kind of informal. It's not the board. It's a informal group." But Ruth, talk about those days a little bit, because I know what you told me is, and you knew I agreed, I had written about the REP and what a treasure it is. It's an Arkansas treasure, but basically we're going to have to reinvent this thing.
Exactly. And before I even tell that story, I want to say the smartest thing we've done in the past decade was get Will Trice.
Amen. Amen.
We'll get back to that and what a difference he's made. But in 2016, 2017, we finally figured out that the business plan was not going to work. And there were lots of pressures across the nation on nonprofit theaters. So we were not alone at that point in time, but we did finally figure this out. Hey, we got to take a hard look. And the hardest part of that look was we actually went dark or quit producing before the final show of that season.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I can't tell you what a sad board meeting that was. I mean, we were in tears.
I can imagine, yeah.
But, you know, sometimes you just have to do what you have to do. So we went dark at that point in time and said, we've got to figure out how to rebirth this theater, how to figure out what kind of model will work, because we know that we love this theater enough to work hard at it. And we know there are people like Rex Nelson out there who love this theater. And in fact, that's what happened. We were amazed. We were amazed at the outpouring of support from the community when they realized that, in fact, we needed their support, because theater, nonprofit regional theaters, are sort of a 50-50 proposition.
Oh, absolutely.
You can make enough money to pay for 50% of the show, but you got to raise 50% too. So that's where we were then.
Yeah. So what did you do to convince Will? What was your pitch there?
Well, he may have to remind me. I may have told him a story or two. I don't know. But we really did need someone who understood both the art and the business.
Exactly.
Of theater.
Both sides, yeah.
And that's what Will brought to the table, plus a love of Arkansas and a love and respect for the rep. So, but what else did I tell you, Will? Have we kept all our promises?
What was the pitch, Will? And why did you finally say, okay, I'm coming home to Arkansas?
I mean, you know, to be fair, like I was at a place in my life and my family's life that we were ready to kind of make some sort of change. But you know, like I said earlier, like it didn't. There was very little convincing involved. Like, I mean, because it was the rep, because it was my hometown, had I done a little more due diligence.
yeah.
But I didn't want to. No. And it also just, it seemed like an opportunity just not only to, you know, try to help, but also what a fascinating kind of business problem to tackle and to kind of pour it. It almost felt like my work, both producing theater, but also my early career in management consulting, and all felt like it was kind of leading up to this.
I was just about to say, because I think, Ruth, you hit on something that is very interesting, and that is, you know, we're almost dealing with a left brain, right brain type thing here. You've got to have the creative side, but then you've got to make the business side work too. And again, Will, in your career, you have a lot of experience on both sides there.
Well, and then there's a third side that is just insanity, because
oh, great.
It doesn't work as a business.
Yeah.
It's impossible for it to work as a business.
Yeah.
And it can be confusing for folks who aren't super familiar with theater as an industry. And it's weird because we'll say things like an industry. And there are for-profit theaters. You know, Broadway is a for-profit endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
But even that is subsidized investors who you know, through some combination of willful ignorance and kind of naive optimism, will invest and generally not get their money back.
Make money, yeah.
And then, you know, of course, you'll have things like Hamilton or, you know, Wicked that become like an annuity for those investors. But the only reason those exist is because of all of the other shows that get done that never recoup any of their investment. So theater just doesn't make sense as a business. But I think we as humans recognize the need for it and develop different levels of passion for it and want to make sure we have it, just in the same way that, like, healthcare is a business, but it also needs subsidy.
Exactly. My newspaper business is quickly getting to that point, as you know. So I understand completely that you need that subsidy for people who love it, people who know it needs to be a part of life. The rep has been, and again, you go back to your experience, but such a part of the cultural mix here for so long. And Will, you've been all over the country, and I would dare say for a market this size, it's been pretty unusual through the decades to have a professional theater as well thought of as the rep for this size market when you look around the country.
It's incredibly unusual. Most of our sort of sister theaters around the world, the kind of the network of professional regional theaters that we're in are in markets either much larger than ours or they're, you know, kind of smaller tourist destinations that have a proximity to a larger market.
Right, getting big summer crowds, whatever. Right. And yeah.
But being in our size and as isolated as we are as a market, it is very unusual to have this as an amenity. And that's why the story of the rep, particularly over these past few years, is a really strange, interesting intersection of, you know, the story of an industry that has been going through a whole lot, but also the story of a community that has its own trajectory and its own economics and its own realities that it's dealing with. And here we are as an organization riding those two waves, and it can be choppy.
Absolutely. I write, and you're talking about different waves and what the rep represents. Ruth, I write a lot, as you know, about downtown revitalization too. And the rep now for years has been that solid anchor right around the corner from where we're taping here in downtown Little Rock for many years, while a lot of others have come and gone downtown.
Well, and in fact, when we moved to Main Street, we were the only thing on Main Street.
Oh, it was spooky, wasn't it?
It was deader than a doornail. That was a bold move on our part.
It was.
And I'm so delighted that we're still there. And I want to mention another thing that we learned in that work that you helped us do, Rex, when we were trying to reimagine what the rep was. We learned that not only was the rep unique for a community our size, for us to have that kind of quality and longevity in this city, but think about all of the theaters we've got. And those were birthed out of the rep. I think back in the old days, we had the rep and we had Murray's.
Mm-hmm. And Community Theater of Little Rock.
And that was it.
Yeah.
Now we've got, what, 5, 8? Community theaters that operate constantly in the cities. And it grew out of the rep. It grew out of young people like Will, who got their taste of theater at the rep. And they said, this is too wonderful. You know, I want to be a part of this in some way. And so that was something that I was astounded by, that what an impression the rep has made on this community year after year after year.
Absolutely. And you have so many people that 4 years have stepped up, but people get older, people die, and I know that Will, finding, you know, new supporters is just a constant battle. Again, to use our analogy, it's like finding new subscribers, younger people to get involved. That's something that never lets up, does it?
Yeah. No, absolutely not. And it can be tricky too, because there's a perennial concern about the graying of audiences, per se. But people had those same concerns 30 years ago for a completely different generation, and the young people that they were trying to get in the doors then are the ones that they're worried about
now. Leaving. Yeah, good point.
I'm one of those.
So, you know, some of it is just about kind of the life cycle that people have with their disposable income and their time, and, you know, people go through phases of having kids, and, you know, But it is impacted then by, you know, what's your population of your market going through, and how, you know, like, what's that demographic shift? And we do absolutely have to deal with those realities.
You know, one of the things that you touched on earlier, I wanted you to get in a little more. Ruth was talking about that period from 2016, 17, 18, when the theater went dark for a time. It doesn't make you feel any better about what we've had to go through here in Little Rock, but certainly not alone. Boards all over the nation were having to make, and still are to a certain extent, right, having to make those same decisions.
Oh, absolutely. And if anything, we're as an industry in an inflection point. You know, I think there were trends that we were all starting to face across the country. About kind of the sustainability of what we were doing in this mix of trying to find philanthropic support to subsidize ticket sales, and that it really wasn't working because costs were skyrocketing. But, you know, then the pandemic.
I mean, you came, you started redesigning things, and then in the spring of 2020, the pandemic comes along.
Yeah. I'll never forget the board meeting where we first talked about the pandemic. And, yeah. Well, it's not going to come here.
Yeah. And shutting the doors.
Mm-hmm.
It has been just the ultimate game changer for our whole industry. And, you know, when we were forced to shut down, we didn't have the kind of financial stability to try to keep going in some way through that. We needed to get as small as we possibly could and regroup and see, you know, try to be around on the other side of it. And when that other side came and we came back, we had actually done a whole lot of work around our expenses and our structure. And we came back with a much smaller operating budget than we mm-hmm. had going in. And had we been then able to do the same type of business as we were doing prior to the pandemic, we would be way in the black.
Wow. Wow.
But of course, that's not what happened at all across the country. Mm-hmm. Across the country, we were seeing reductions of 40%, 50% sometimes in sales, and also impacting the philanthropy because of what the economy's going through. And you know, for the first year or two, it's like, oh, well, this is just we got to ramp back up and we'll get back to normal. And then we realized, no, we're actually looking at a new normal, unfortunately. And we're probably looking at a contraction of our industry overall.
Mm.
And industries go through cycles.
They do.
Right?
Indeed. Indeed.
Same thing was happening in brick and mortar retail, right?
Yeah.
And you
have to change. I mean, For gosh sakes, you're sitting here doing a podcast in a newspaper. I mean, is that not the ultimate example? I mean, we still call it a newspaper, but we're a 24/7 digital operation basically now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's how you survive. Same thing with theater. Yeah.
And it was a little solace to know that we are facing this along with every other theater in the country, and mm-hmm. we're all trying to figure out how to respond to it. The difference being a lot of our sister theaters, particularly the ones in larger markets, were a lot larger than us to begin with. And so they can have cuts and still basically be the same thing after making those cuts. And also a lot of them have large endowments that they are frankly draining like crazy over these past years because they haven't figured out what to do for as a long-term solution. We were neither of those things. We were already pretty threadbare and didn't have an endowment to drain down to buy us 5 years or 10 years or whatever. It's like, mm-hmm. we need to figure out something more quickly. And that was the point that we were at in the spring of 23. So last spring was realization, you know, if we keep doing what we've been doing these past 2 years, which was running at a deficit, a sizable deficit, we'll only be able to do it for another year, maybe.
Wow. Wow.
That was not a
not an option.
Acceptable solution.
Exactly. That just can't happen.
So we made a big shift, and that was the shift to a summer season that we just completed our first one this year. And, you know, knock on wood, I'm very happy to say it's gotten us as close to break even as we've been, certainly since before I got here. Not really sure. Ruth could probably say like the last like actual break even year.
I don't know that there ever was one.
But, you know, our best.
Getting close is a success, let me tell you.
Right.
And you know, there were of course trade-offs to go into a summer season like that. You know, folks travel and also just people don't like change in general. But happy to say that, you know, the houses were full and
it's great.
People were enjoying the shows. And it is kind of nice to know that just about every night throughout the summer, we've got 300-ish people coming to downtown Little Rock and mm-hmm. going to restaurants and that it's kind of alive in the evenings.
Exactly.
Down here.
Exactly. It is.
Well, and one of the really important things about the summer season is that we were able to keep the quality that we have maintained over the years
mm-hmm.
because there's a history of summer theater, summer stock theater in the United States. And so we could get the actors that we wanted. We could get the directors that we wanted. We could get the designers. Some of those folks, you know, have full-time jobs at universities, but they could still participate in a summer season.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the reasons that we looked at it in the beginning, because the quality of what we do is critical. So I think that's really important for our patrons to understand.
So, Will, pull out your crystal ball and tell me where you see things going with the rep in the next 2 to 5 years as we move
and
forward.
Please note that he's smiling.
Because it's almost impossible to predict. I understand. But do your best.
No,
yeah.
You know, I think, like I said, we've come so close, you know, so within shooting distance of kind of having a, quote, sustainable model. Now, granted, that model still relies on a significant amount of philanthropy,
exactly,
and contributions from the community. Like, and that's that can be a tricky thing about theater versus a big capital campaign for a museum, for example. It's like you build it, and then sure, there's some ongoing operating expenses, but it's very kind of capital upfront investment heavy. For a place like us, where it's all about your operation and it's all about labor, if that support lets up at any point, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
So continuing that support and continuing to re-up it every single year is crucial for us to stay on this trajectory that we're on. And if we can just increase it just a little bit more, we'll be in great shape.
Yeah, exactly. So how do you increase it, Ruth? What are you doing out there to get those contributions up?
Well, I think something that I was thinking about and thinking about this time to talk about the rep is that I can't, as a patron, I can't expect to love every single show I see at the rep.
Mm-hmm.
But I can expect a certain level of quality, a certain level of professionalism. I can expect good customer service. I can expect to be thrilled with some of the shows, to realize this has changed my life just because I saw this, and to say, and that other show that I thought was kind of ho-hum, somebody else felt the same way about it that mm-hmm. I did about my favorite show.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's critical for our patrons. And in fact, we have some incredibly loyal patrons. We have folks who've been buying season tickets for years.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The season ticket model is kind of passé now. Most people kind of decide what they want to do
on a show-by-show basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a week-by-week basis or whatever.
Yeah.
So
we hope it doesn't go away, though.
No.
Exactly. You need those season purchasers. Yeah.
And those are the people who say, hey, I'm in it for the whole experience,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't have to be thrilled every time I walk in that building. I have to be well-treated, and I have to, you know, feel like I've supported a worthy institution, and I think we are.
Yeah.
I think we're key to the quality of life.
Here. I agree completely. We had lunch recently, and Will, we talked about this some, and so many people always looking for the negatives, and one of the things I try to do is point out some positives. And you know, when I looked at the arts and the performing arts, we had talked about the rep being that anchor downtown, but you know, you take the $160 million roughly that was spent on the old Arkansas Arts Center, now Arkansas, a Museum of Fine Arts. You take the $70 million we spent on the Robinson Center a few years ago for performing arts. The Symphony's new headquarters in East Village, I think, was roughly $12 million. Now we're starting on the Wingate Art Space, which is about a $30 million project. That's over a quarter of $1 billion in capital for the arts in downtown Little Rock alone. I would dare say that's pretty good for a city this size.
$1 billion.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. Yeah. And if we can, you know, sometimes I think if we can just siphon off just a little percentage of that, like we can like bring
you're
the theater
part
to it.
You're
yeah.
part of that, such a part of that cultural mix though. And it's pretty good.
And I do think an ecosystem of the arts is important.
Yeah.
And it isn't just about, you know, being a visual arts center or a music center or you know, that it's the combination. You want all of the disciplines represented. You want that variety because that's. Yeah, that's what makes the holistic cultural life.
Yeah, and Ruth, back to being that anchor when there was nothing else down here, as you again experienced this morning after you all parked, you know, we're taping this here at the Democrat Gazette building at the corner of Capitol and Scott. So right down half block away at Capitol and Main, you've right now got the Boyle building being renovated. You've got the Little Rock Technology Park expansion going on catty corner to that. It's kind of exciting to see that construction going on in the neighborhood, isn't it? So you'll have some company.
It really is. And I take some credit for that because the rep was there.
I agree.
And has been there.
And has stayed here.
Mm-hmm.
I agreed. So not just from a cultural standpoint, but, Will, I think you would agree that for a city this size, theater is important from an economic development standpoint. I give this speech all over the state, but it's about how economic development in the knowledge-based economy of the 20th century is attracting talented people. It's no longer about attracting manufacturing plants. Mm-hmm. It's attracting talented people to a community, and theater is part of that mix that attracts highly educated, talented people.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the folks who are looking for to move here and to work for these companies, they're looking for something to do on Friday nights.
You know? Exactly.
They don't want to stay home and watch Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
They want to like go out and have a meal and go see a show and you know, maybe have a drink after at another establishment. You know, they want to be surrounded by other people. They don't want to be isolated in their homes. You know, and theater is kind of right at the center of that.
Yeah, it really is. Again, I can't imagine without it, because it is such a part of the cultural mix of who we are in this city. Now, one thing, we're talking about the summer season, that's not to say, Will, that the rep is not busy and you're not busy during the school year. There's still a lot of outreach, still a lot of programs going on.
Yes.
And I wanted to make sure we talked about that. People said, well, what do they do the other 9 months?
Yeah, no, thank you, because I was going to have to like, can we extend the time of this? No, so the other great benefit, mm-hmm. Besides just being more affordable to moving to a summer season, is that it opened up our capacity for a completely different type of programming the rest of the year. And it's programming that I think when we were producing your shows year round, we would have thought it was kind of ancillary and nice if we, you know, if somebody's free or we get a grant or something like that. But it's actually really essential work and really meaningful work that can really change people's lives. And I call it applied theater, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's work in community, in education, but that is fully kind of rooted in things that theater makers are particularly, apt to do. There's a lot of intersection with mental health and emotional development with this work. But let me just give you a few of the examples. So we've got a program that we've got two programs going on right now. One is called The Breach, where we work with a cohort of veterans and first responders and their family members and active service participants, where they get together with a therapist and a theater artist, and they work through their experiences mm-hmm. with the service, it takes place over about 10 weeks of sessions and then culminates in a public performance. Ruth actually participated in last year's cohort and had a very powerful story to share with folks. We had like a sold out performance last Veterans Day. We will have another one this coming November. So that's an incredibly powerful program. We have another one that's a little more zany and fun. We call it the Downtown Playmakers Project.
It's fabulous. It's fabulous.
And it's a replication of similar projects that folks that we work with that worked on in both New York and in Providence, Rhode Island, where we work with a group of third graders from MLK Elementary.
Oh, wow.
And we have adult professional dramaturgs work with them and coach them to write short original plays. And then we produce them with adult professional artists.
And sets and lights and props. I mean, it is so exciting.
And we take the plays very seriously.
Yeah, yeah, like, gotcha.
But they're written by third graders, so they're ridiculous.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah. How fun.
I think there was a dinosaur in one.
Yes. And that will actually that program is growing. So this fall, the cohort of third graders from last year are now fourth graders mm-hmm. in their second year of the program, and then we'll have a new cohort of third graders in the spring that'll come through. And then in their third year as fifth graders, it's actually a musical that they work on.
An original
musical.
Yeah.
So that's that's fun.
We devised last year a performance piece in conjunction with the AP African American Studies curriculum at Central called Proud. And we did a series of free student matinees in February of last year with that. We're going to do a different iteration of that this year that we think may be a little more focused on poetry and mm-hmm. Harlem Renaissance and some really cool stuff there. And honestly, the laundry list of programs like these that we are continuing to grow at, you know, as we get the resources to put towards them it's very long, but it's also very exciting and very like directly impactful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just have to say, I watched those third grade plays and the little playwright was sitting over to this side and I thought, that child is going to be president of the United States someday. That child is going to be head of a corporation. That child is going to be a theater director. I mean, you just knew that this was one of those experiences that they will benefit from mm-hmm. for their entire life.
And there's a type of theater education that I think, and this is another area that we're particularly interested in, and is around early childhood and structured play and how that relates to emotional development, particularly in these years of getting out on the other side of COVID, and we saw what that isolation did to some of these kids, and you know, group play and you know, devising rules with your peers is, you know, these are like really fundamental emotional and mental mm-hmm. skills that we need to succeed in any kind of discipline. You know, you don't need to want to be a tap dancer for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
But there are, you know, theater activities and theater education at its root has a lot of different forms that can really benefit kids.
Yeah.
A big thing is teamwork. If you're a part of that team that's putting together that production and you discover that you have to pull the curtain, you realize you've got to pull the curtain. I mean, you know, that's critical to the entire show. So I think that the kids learn, and adults obviously learn so much by being part of any kind of a theater play, theater production, et cetera.
And then on the other end of life, you know, one of the other areas where mm-hmm. we particularly are interested in growing is work with seniors, mm-hmm. and work that's very based in memory recall, and the way that kind of storytelling can help with, you know, fighting Alzheimer's and fight, you know,
right, right.
And so yeah, like I said, the laundry list of this kind of work, of this kind of applied theater work, is so long that and we just. If we can just get the support, we will keep doing it. And then come summer again, and we put on some really fun shows for everybody.
I'm so glad you mentioned the third grade. You know, that was kind of the start and end of my theater career. I was lucky enough to grow up in a college town in Arkadelphia, and we had a playwright named Dennis Holt, who lived right down the street from me. He was on the faculty at Washtenaw. And as a third grader, his wife was my third grade teacher, so I was selected to be one of the kids in Thornton Wilder's Our Town, you
Wonderful.
Know. And I can remember still getting to stay up late and go into the cast party after after closing nights. You know, my parents let me stay up and hang out with these college students, but I still love attending. Like I said, that was kind of the end of my theater career, but love attending and. Thanks for all you do. The rep, I knew we were going to run out of time quickly, but I'll have you back. The rep is so important to just who we are as Arkansans, who we are as residents of Little Rock. And Will, thanks for coming home. And Ruth, thanks for all you do to keep the rep alive and viable.
Well, and thank you, Rex, for being such an incredible champion of everything our community has to offer across the state and particularly
thank
in Little Rock.
You. This is an important piece. Thank you for listening to the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.